Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
We're taking another step on the leadership journey today, and joining me, as always, is our co-host, Brian Kite. Brian, it's great to have you here again.
Keith, good morning. That's what time it is when we're recording this, at least. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're listening. And for the first time in a long time, I'm talking to you from my own house today. Big time.
That's good, because I remember you were going over the Golden Gate Bridge, I believe, at one time when we were talking, and you've been all over the place.
It was the Bay Bridge.
Bay Bridge.
And we wanted to actually do this yesterday, but I was traveling and coming in, and time got a little too compressed. So had we done this yesterday, would have had another opportunity. But here we are today. I'm actually in my own home, so I got to bring it because I'm on my home turf here today.
There you go. Well, today we're going to focus on creating a strong culture in a noisy world. And when you think about all the things that go into a program, there's certainly a lot of opportunities for noise. There's going to be noise in a lot of areas. And when you look to the guys who are really doing it well right now, and I could think of a number of guys who have been on this podcast and talked to them, and man, they have everybody aligned. They have their administration aligned. They have their parents aligned. They have the community aligned. You know, their youth programs are aligned with them. Everybody within their program is aligned, but they didn't build that in 1 year. They didn't build that over a few years. It took some time. They had to deal with some of the noise that really prevents you from getting everything aligned, that you have to stay the course. And before we got going, Brian, you and I were just talking about all those things that can drive you away from it. And that's going to be some of the things we share today.
Culture is obviously a recurring theme on this podcast. It's one of the cornerstones of what we teach. The specific topic for today around culture, I'll say this, one of the reasons I wanted to address this topic now is to tee up some of the deeper conversation and application that I'm going to bring to the national conference in Orlando in January. One of the sessions that I'm going to do is on creating a championship level culture for both winning and the experience of being with a football program. So I thought it would be good for us to, you know, spend 30 minutes or so talking about one of the biggest challenges I hear from coaches in culture. And it's this: every coach, I mean, literally every coach, regardless of sport, that I have worked with over the last 5 years has at some point expressed frustration and sometimes even exasperation at trying to build culture, their culture, while being surrounded by people, institutions, and influences that didn't support or reinforce the culture they were trying to build. Just recently, I was with Division I coaching staff, and here was the biggest challenge that they voiced. They only get access to the athletes, whatever those hours are a day, right? The NCAA mandate
is...
Yeah,
the 20-hour week. Yeah.
What is it? Yeah, right. So it's, what, 3 hours a day, ballpark, okay? Mm-hmm. And here's what they express frustration about. They've got 3 hours a day of influence over these young men, and they're losing the battle of the influence of the other 21 hours in their life. And they were just expressing the difficulty and the frustration. And in some ways, some of the people in the room were expressing the impossibility of it. Literally, we're saying it's impossible for us to do what we want to do, given the fact that we only get 3 hours. And what the players are exposed to and told and what they hear in the other 21 hours of their life in the day. And my reply to that staff is what I say to every coaching staff. And that is, it's not impossible. You just have to be better. If the world gets 21 hours a day of impact and you only get three, first of all, don't say only get three. Say, we get three. And second of all, that simply means it's your skill, it's your relationship, it's your compelling culture against those other forces, skill and relationship and compelling culture. And it is absolutely a competition. Who's better? Now, make sure you hear what I said. It's not a fight. I actually might use that language from time to time. And I do sometimes say culture is an everyday fight, but I don't think that's the right language in this context, because it's not a fight of you versus them. And we'll come back to this. As coaches, we can't afford to get caught fighting against those entities, because sometimes those entities, Keith, who are the people that you are having to compete against for your players' attention and mindset and ear and heart? Who is the hardest group of people that you as a coach have to influence, frankly, sometimes even against, and protect a player's mind from? Who's that group of people? Who's the hardest one?
Depending what level you're at, I would say peers is a big one. And if you're at the high school level, I think parents could be a difficult one as well if they don't see what they want for little Johnny.
And you don't think that happens at the college level too?
Oh, I know it happens. I just never had to deal with it as the offensive coordinator. That's what the head coach gets paid for. But yeah, it would happen at the college level as well. Maybe not on the scale, but yes, it happens.
Right. And yeah, of course, it's different at college and high school, but it still happens at both. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And the reason I say you can't go to fight is because if you're fighting a parent, you're going to lose that every time. You're going to lose that battle. One, you're going to lose it on the small scale between you and that player. They're going to choose their parents. And by the way, if you win that and they choose to follow you, if you're fighting against a parent and they choose to follow you and not the parent, what's the impact of that young person's life?
Yeah, it's not good.
I would say even if you win that fight, that's not something to be proud of. Number two, on the large scale, if you are a coach who fights parents, you have a shelf life that is not real long, and it ain't going to win much, and the experience is not going to be great. So even the broad strategy of creating a culture and then fighting and resenting parents, and I just see and hear a lot of coaches do that. And yes, by the way, even when you are talking in social times, in social circles, and you express all the negative stuff that we express about parents, and then you try to overcome that in how you coach, but then you step out for coffee or for beers, you're relaxing or whatever it is, and you're crushing parents, and all of that toxic energy comes out about parents, that stuff shows up in how we coach. So we actually have to shift and switch our lens. Mm-hmm. So I want to come back to that one a little bit later.
Yeah, I'd like to hear some practical thoughts on how we handle that, but we'll come back to that.
Yeah, come back to it. So the first big thing is that it's a competition. Okay, so you are indeed competing. And when I sit down with coaches in their staff rooms and we get in the whiteboard and we start actually rolling our sleeves up on how do you build culture in a Division I football program, in a Division II lacrosse program, in a high school football program, there's all the how-tos on culture, which we've talked about a bunch. We're not going to go into all of those, but we will go into them at the national conference. Today's topic is a conversation that pops up every time we get into the how-to on culture, because at some point in the conversation, the coaches, they start throwing out the yeah buts. We say, here's how you build culture, here's what you do, and then they yeah but. And then it's, yeah, but I only have so much time to get with the players. True. So you have to be better. You can't afford to be worse. You can't afford to gloss over. You can't afford to be generic. If you only have 5 periods, Keith, to implement a new offensive game plan, how good do you have to be as a coach if all you get is 5 periods of implementation? You have to be better as a coach, right? Same thing with culture. You have to be better. But the second thing they throw yeah buts on, yeah but, BK, is yeah but, and then they start pointing to all the influences in society on teams and on young people today. And so most, if not all of you, are familiar with the principle of 20 square feet that we talk about. That is, each person owns 20 square feet of the program. You own 20 square feet of the culture, and you own 20 square feet of the strategy and execution. And inside your 20 square feet, you have control. Inside your 20 square feet, you are the culture. And then there's above the 20 square feet, the next immediate level is the unit. That's the position group. Your 20 square feet is part of the unit, and therefore the unit culture, the unit strategy, the unit execution is just a collection of the 20 square feet of the people that are in it. And then above the unit level, the next level is the team. And so there's a team level, a unit level, and then there's a me level in my 20 square feet. Culture is not built top down, team to unit to me. Culture is built and executed from the 20 square feet up. My 20 square feet owned, contributing to the unit culture and strategy and execution, which ultimately brings a team unit or a team culture, strategy and execution together. The team culture is really, this is actually really, this is a breakthrough for coaches a lot of times. The team culture, it's actually not really a thing. The team culture is actually a collection of a bunch of unit cultures that come together to perform in a pretty small window of time, just 3 hours a week. That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. And when I look at that, I mean, it is, I think, critical. Number one, you have to have your position coaches aligned. What is the overall team culture? But they have to build it within their group. It's their challenge. It's their responsibility. I mean, they go beyond their 20 square feet there as a unit. But to build that culture in the unit, to get them aligned so that it fits in as and will be aligned with the team culture. And I know that happens where it's not, where a group is working outside of it in some ways, where they're not completely aligned. And I think, you know, that becomes part of the noise too. Certainly we have to take care of our own house before we can start expanding outside noises, but we want to make sure, you know, we're aligned internally.
It does. And you know, the we believe deeply in the physics and the timelessness of this. And so here's something that gets lost in the midst of, frankly, a lot of the hyperbole and Twitter quotes and, you know, Newt Rockne and Vince Lombardi speeches that are, with all due respect, mostly a bunch of good sounding BS that coaches don't like. But when it comes to coaching quotes, they love them and throw them out there. And it avoids all of the messy details that actually have to happen. Here's some of the messy details in culture. Unit culture, it requires independent alignment. Meaning what? If you have 80 to 100 players in your team, you don't get 80 to 100 individual, completely aligned people to exactly one thing all the time. That's not how it happens. It requires some independent alignment, meaning smaller groups, units, have to make their own alignment decisions and then bring it together. So the physics of a football team is a football team, it's really 10 separate unit cultures forming together in some form of alignment or misalignment. The offensive line is its own group. They have their own culture over there. They do. Mm-hmm. So does the D-line. So does the wide receiver group. And when a team culture is aligned, a team culture is aligned when the separate units form together to create alignment between each other. And then you start to feel that team sensation. But look, you've been on teams. Go back to when you were a player, Keith. Mm-hmm. As a player, did you ever have the exact same relationship with every other player on the team? And on any team you ever were on, did you ever have the same relationship with every single guy on that team?
No.
No, never. You always had guys that you were what? Closer with? Not closer with. Did you, on every team, was there, this is now we get into the real messy stuff. On every team you ever played on, Keith, was there at least one guy you didn't really like?
Oh yeah, I'm sure. There were guys who maybe from the way they handle life outside of football, maybe I didn't prefer. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It could be anything. I'm not saying didn't like as in a character flaw. I just mean, were there guys that you just, there was there and you're like, I just don't get along with you.
Yeah.
I don't want to spend a ton of time around you. Like you're just not my kind of guy.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Right. You looked at him and you didn't feel deep love. Right. You didn't feel like, man, I can't wait to go spill it for that guy today. Yeah. Because on every single team that exists. So you're never going to have this ideal state of perfection in culture. But what you can have is this independent alignment, right? Culture is not a group decision. It's an individual decision. Each individual has to decide to align. That individual decision does not typically happen at the team broad, high, a global level. It happens at a unit level or at a smaller group level. They're staying more committed to a smaller group of people who they have tighter relationships, bonds, commitments, and senses of responsibility for. And so because of that, when you're making culture, you're really trying to create 10 unit cultures, which puts a lot of the responsibility for culture building onto the assistant coaches, which we've talked about repeatedly. It's not a primarily head coach job. It is primarily at the execution level, a unit coach, position coach job. And then you create that unit alignment. Then when that happens, that's where you see teams that are fully, fully aligned. And from the outside looking in, it looks like a complete team alignment culture. But you know the real detail, and that is we just got each of our units right. And then the units decided to collectively align together on that Friday or Saturday or Thursday night, when, you know, whatever it is, whatever time they're actually playing. But here's what we ultimately get to. What we ultimately get to is, in the midst of doing all of that, the conversation turns to, well, BK, it would be a lot easier to do that. It kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. It would be a lot easier to do that if, and then the coach, the coaching staff starts to cite their favorite external negative influence that is outside of the team that is making it difficult or impossible for them to create that kind of unit culture and team culture inside. And so I draw this 20 square feet diagram, and you can picture this in your head. I draw a square for 20 square feet. Then I draw a bigger square around that for unit. Then I draw a bigger square around that one for team. And so you picture three squares rising up, 20 square feet, and then a bigger square around it, unit, a bigger square around that, team. Then I ask an interesting question. I say, okay, let's start talking about the cultures that influence and affect team and players beyond your team culture. And we just kind of talk through it. And so let's do that right now. What's the next, in your observation, Keith, what would be the next box we would draw above the team culture that, and let's just say right now for a high school, okay, for a high school, since that's the majority of the audience, it transfers to every environment. So do your own transferring if you're not in a high school. What's the next biggest influence culturally over young people above the team, on a football team?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the school culture. And really, again, it's I think both the kids and the adults that make that up.
So I think we ought to separate that and say, because the influence that the school has versus the influence that the social environment of the other kids has, those are two different kinds of influence.
Right.
And they influence with different levels. What do you think is the next biggest influence? Which one has a bigger immediate impact on kids' attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors? The social environment of the school or the actual school structure, teachers, and institution?
100%, it's the social environment.
Okay. So the next biggest culture influencer is going to be the social environment of their peers, the one that's live, the real life one, the one they see and feel every day. Okay. What's the next biggest influence above that? Do you think family is a bigger influence on kids, or do you think the school and institution is a bigger influence?
No, it's the family.
Okay. So the next biggest one above that, now we've got, five boxes. The next biggest one is the family. So separate from your team, you have, and this is true, right? The social environment of their peers is literally compelling and asking for certain attitudes, certain beliefs, and certain behaviors from your players. The school environment of their peers and friends is asking for their belief, behavior, and buy-in to what's going on, right?
Right.
And so is family. Let's just stop right there. Here's my question. Do you, as a coach, are you comfortable and willing to accept all the things that are being influenced to your players from their peer environment at school and outside of school, just their live peer environment, and from their families? Are you willing to absorb and adopt all of those beliefs, behaviors, and attitudes into your culture, in your football program?
Well, I would think there's going to be some things in there that we don't want as part of our program.
So that's why I ask it. Are you willing to adopt whatever is influenced there and say, yeah, whatever they're getting from their family and whatever they're getting from their friends in that culture environment, yeah, bring it into our program. Let's run by those rules. Are you willing to say yes to that? Because it's a yes or no.
No, absolutely not.
Here you go. The answer is no. Not because it's full of all bad stuff, but because why? It's not reliable. So now we've identified a very important point here. And that is that no matter what is going on outside of your football program, the culture of your football program is not absorbing what is coming from the outside, even and especially if it's from peer networks, their day-to-day interaction within the school, and from their family. If they get something great from their family, awesome, added byproduct benefit. Amazing, great, we all love it. If they're not getting great stuff from their family, we're all good because we don't absorb that culture anyway. We have our own independent culture inside of our football program that is even separate from the school itself, because I will even add it to the school. No criticism, no negativity. It's just an honest question. Am I willing to adopt the culture of our public school system or private school and say, yes, the culture of our public school system, that is the one that I want in my football program. We should run by those rules. Yes or no?
In general, I would say no, because yeah, there's going to be a lot of things that, you know, you just don't want as part of it. Now, I would say there are certainly schools that are closer aligned to their football programs and which you want than others.
Correct.
Or whatever organization you might have within that school. But in general, no, the answer is no.
Yeah, but even in grade schools, and we work with a bunch of them. Right. You know, we work with every kind of public school. We work with great, amazing public schools. We work with ones that are solid, but, you know, kind of have some struggles. And we work with ones that are highly dysfunctional. We work with all of them. But even in a great public school system, the answer is this. Even in a great public school system, your football program is unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same environment in a football program that it is with teachers and principals and education in classrooms of history and English and, you know, AP chemistry. Not the same.
No.
So you can't confidently absorb it, nor can you, by the way, nor can you absorb at a college campus, nor can you absorb the college campus culture and atmosphere
right.
into a football program and compete at a high level. You can't. I don't have to criticize it. I don't have to judge it. I don't have to label it. I just have to say this. It's not the same. And we're not absorbing those things into here. But now ask the hard questions. All right, let's lay a few more. What are the next big influencers of young people in their culture above that? So we've got peer, family, school, and institution. What are the other big culture influencers that affect the attitude, belief systems, and behavior of young people that you are genuinely competing against for culture alignment? What else influences them?
I think the larger community in some ways is an influence. So when I think of, again, the football program, that's probably going to be some of your boosters, your fans, et cetera.
And just literally the town,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, kids who come from, I talk about it all the time. You know, kids get influenced by poverty and kids get influenced by privilege.
Right.
And, you know, the kids get influenced by poverty. They come in with weak or angry mindsets, coaches say, and then kids who come from privilege come in with soft and entitled mindsets, and they attack the culture outside and judge the kids coming in rather than just be better at creating a culture that helps them get where they need to go. So yeah, the town and the community that you come from has a big influence on people. Keep going. What else? Because we have to lay out the truth here. We got to lay out what's real. If you don't know what's real, E plus R equals O. It's really hard to respond to events that you're unwilling to see and be honest about.
Yeah, I think as you expand outside the community, and a lot of this really is through the social media influence, that's where we get a lot of, I guess, our beliefs or influences. But in large, it becomes, I don't know if you want to call that the country, but, you know, it expands immensely outside of the community with all the ideas now that really are our players are exposed to. And that's probably a lot different than it was even 5 years ago.
Yeah, and so I tend to put those into two. You could put them into one. I put it into two different influences. One is the media, social media influence, all the things they see on their phone, TV, et cetera. And then number two is just the country, the culture that exists at this time and place within the country, national narratives and all that different kinds of stuff.
Right.
Because that is increasingly becoming something that affects and influences how everybody behaves because of how we consume stuff. And most of that comes through the media. So now what we laid out, but typically by the time we have this conversation where I'm drawing it on the whiteboard, you've now got 20 square feet, unit, and team culture. And then you've got these other 10 boxes of these influences that are above that, driving down to try to compete for the attitude, mindset, attention, behavior of your players. And they see all of that. And this is about the time coaches are ready to hit the panic button. And I tell them, listen, I promise you, building this culture and winning that competition of creating the culture you want in your program, I promise you, it is so much harder than you think it is. And then they're looking at that going, well, it looks pretty hard. And good news, it's much harder than you're even thinking right now. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, but I also say it realistically, because here's what I want to do, Keith. I want to tap into the competitive side of coaches to say, look, it is absolutely a competition. Who's better? Who's better at the stuff that matters? Instagram or you? Who's better? Their peers or you? You're competing against a 16-year-old. And I would think that if you're 45 and you're coaching and you've been in this game for a while, I would think you learned some stuff. And I would think you learn what moves a teenager. And I would think that you've practiced and you've gotten good and you care and you are there and you are deep. I would think you're not a stubborn, short-sighted, irritated, grumpy, judgmental person who just undermines people because they're young and then tells them command and control, do what I say because I know it works. I would think you've learned that that doesn't work.
Right.
I would also think you've learned that you're not going to beat Instagram and social media by criticizing it. I would think you've learned that if you have a negative view towards parents and you are standoffish, that everybody, including the players, feel that, and that's not something that attracts them to follow you. So I want to tap into two pieces with this, because it is harder than we ever think. I want to tap into the competitive side of coaches to say, look, you got to compete and win that. And I want to tap in to the heart of coaches and say, stop judging those other influences and cultures. The social media environment is bigger than you. You're not going to win that fight. You're not going to win the fight against it. You can competitively, though, you can be more compelling than it. So compete, but don't fight. Don't judge. Don't undermine. Kids love Instagram, most of them. Kids love Instagram. If you come up and you crush Instagram and you try to make them feel guilt and shame for Instagram, they're not going to move to your side.
No.
They might do it because you control playing time, but they're ultimately going to resent you. Now, if you give them good perspective on Instagram, and I'm just picking Instagram as a platform because it's popular with kids. If you give them good perspective on Instagram, they'll appreciate that over time. If you understand that, look, why do kids like Instagram? It's fun. They socialize. They get meaning. There's peer influence. There's all kinds of things that happen in it that are really important to teenagers. And then you realize what's important to them there, and you make that important to you, but you make your football program's culture something that's an extension of those things that are important to them as well. Now, all of a sudden, you've taken all the energy they're putting into Instagram, and you've converted a bunch of it into creating the culture in your program and getting the alignment. That's a better approach. Or just stay out of their way entirely with it and say, do you on Instagram? And here, I don't find Instagram that important to me. I'm not ever going to judge it for you, but you do you. I don't really care about it. But here's how we're going to make this about what's important to you in our program. And we're going to go get after it. So here's the trick. And it's not a trick. It's a fact. There's a line in your program where your culture starts and the other cultures begin. Nothing crosses over that line. Not peers, not family, not social media, not the country, not society. Your culture has to be your culture. And you have to decide what your culture is about and what gets oxygen in your culture and what does not get oxygen in your culture. But you can't judge those other environments within your culture, because that will actually undermine your culture, because those other things do influence people. They do participate in them. And look, let's get real. You as a coach are influenced by those other things as well. You as a coach are influenced by the politics in our nation, by the things you see on media, by the television shows that you watch, by the relationships you have in your life. If you are in a tough spot in your relationship or in your marriage, if you are having a conflict with your parents, yeah, even as an adult, as a coach, that influences how you do your job. And you might come to work a little rough one day, and a little irritated, and a little short with people because of something happening in some other culture in your life that's not your football culture. And you have to fight the same fight the players fight. you have to compete in the same way that players compete. So the key here that I want to make sure that coaches understand, and then simplify this and be very direct. You're building a culture in your program that is completely unique to every other culture that you encounter. And you have to protect that culture at all costs. But never, ever at the expense of judging or undermining or criticizing or being negative about the other cultures that are influencing the people inside your program. And that's something that needs a lot of improvement in the coaching community, is building a great culture where you are without being negative on the other cultures that are influencing people. That's a skill that actually has to be built, Keith.
Yeah, I see it all the time. There's a couple instances that come to mind from, geez, probably over a decade ago, just sitting in a coaching office, and there weren't a lot of these things at that time we're talking about with social media, but especially talking about the influences in our community, in the social setting of their peers, et cetera, that I can remember coaches just being negative on. And I remember making a point like, look, we can't go on a witch hunt against these things. It's going to happen outside of where we are. We want to be an influence. We want to be a positive influence to get these guys to buy into what we're doing and to make the right choices that aren't going to hurt them within our area. Because there would, in any of those things, whether it's social media, whether it's going to a party and making the wrong decisions in the classroom with how you treat another person or a teacher, like there's all those kinds of things they can do. We want to have a positive influence on that. But we can't be out there attacking every other aspect. Number one, we don't have the time. And number two, if we did want to go on a witch hunt, we could probably find more things that we didn't like than things that we saw were good. And it wasn't worth our effort. But emphasizing what happened between our doors, emphasizing what's happening between our lines on the field, I think were very important for us in how we were going to build our culture. And I can remember symbolically things. I know Pete Carroll, I'm pretty sure he does it with the Seahawks still. He did it with USC. There's just a sign when you came in that building, it said, "I'm in." And that was the checkpoint. You're leaving those other things behind. You are now stepping into our culture here. I can remember specifically to emphasize, it used to be just the lines on the field I talk about, but you know, we had a practice field a little bit away from the school at this one particular place, and we just made another line outside of that, and then that was the realm. When you stepped onto there, we had to let all those other things go, and we had to be focused on what was happening within our team and within the things we needed to do in the time that we were given. And I think that's where we need to be as coaches, because Brian, I just don't think we have the time with all the things we have to do that we can go out and worry about those other things.
You can't. And the reason I get fired up about this is here's the most common popular trend that I see. When we look at those culture influences on the outside, and I actually think this is something, in my opinion, that needs to change in the 20 square feet of coaches and, frankly, in the profession. Just my opinion. The most common trend that I see is looking at those influences from outside your culture and seeing that they're not helping your culture, and then getting resentful of those influences and then leaning on the authority of your coaching position to command everything happening on the inside out of reaction to feeling so frustrated with all the stuff on the outside. And what happens there is it's not focused on whether or not you're deserving of people's alignment and belief and buy-in. It moves immediately to command and control based on authority. And we've talked about this before, Keith.
Right.
Right. It's you look out, right? It's looking at parents and looking at community and looking at social media and looking at what's happening in the school. And then, you know, finding the negative things that are being influenced on that. And they're real. And then inside the program, then reactively saying, "Well, no, I'm the head coach, so we're doing it this way. And I don't give a damn about all that stuff." But then telling players and everybody in it, "Do it because I said so, not because you actually earned it." I go back, it's real. Like, it's a competition. If Instagram or the parents are better at listening to the players, understanding them, getting a connection with them and moving them, then they win, not you. It doesn't matter if you have a title. I mean, there's literally thousands of head coaches in America. It's not unique that you have a title of head coach. It's not that hard to get a title of head coach. And I don't mean that to undermine the profession. It's not that hard to get a title of CEO. Start your own company. You can give yourself three letters, CEO. Okay, this is personal. Okay, I don't mean that in a negative way at all. I mean it in a very real way. Congratulations on having a head job, but it's more responsibility once you have a head coach job, not a right to have authority.
Right.
So yes, if Instagram does a better job at connecting with your players, then it's going to have a bigger influence on them than you are. That's how it works. You don't have to like it, but that's what we have to do. So the authority that is given to us by head coaches is mostly needs to be converted into responsibility. And I think, Keith, and we'll wrap this up, but I think, you know, back to, you know, parents and everything else, the best thing you can do as a coach is start at this spot, and then you can move from there. Start at this spot. Two things. One, know the line between where your culture is in the program and the other cultures, whatever those ones are. And you'd be well served to, frankly, write it out what the other cultures influencing your program are that are unreliable in your willingness to absorb them in, and write them out. Say, here's our team culture, and then here's the other cultures that are influencing us, and we're not going to absorb them. If we get good things, great, but they're unreliable, and therefore we just cannot count on absorbing them. Mm-hmm. And yes, families get included in that, unfortunately. It's just how it works. I'm same thing for my business. I cannot absorb the culture of the families of the people who work for me. Not because they have bad families, but because they don't share the same standards I have as a business. And frankly, I need what I need for our business. We need what we need for our business's standards, not for the family standards. Plus, I want people to be themselves. The families aren't committed to our business culture in the same way that the families aren't committed to your football culture. They didn't ask your permission for how their family should run, nor do they have to. So one, write down your culture and then what are the other cultures and know where that line is. Number two, start at this spot. Have a dispassionate view of those other things. You don't have to set all your opinions aside, but have a dispassionate perspective towards it. Hey, these things happen on Instagram. Hey, other parents have this perspective. Hey, the community is at this spot. Hey, blah, 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 blah. Don't get tied up into all of the emotion on what you think everybody else should do for your program. They don't live to make your program successful. You do. So detach a little bit from those things and pour that passion and pour that energy into creating the culture inside your program that is worthy of buying into for real personal and human reasons. You don't need to judge all the other cultures. Nobody cares. You need to be great at building your culture in a way that the people who are in it are willing to buy into. Don't ask for buy-in. Create something worth buying into where you are.
Brian, if I could just revisit one thing, and I'd like to hear your opinion on this and how you see this being handled in culture. I could share some ideas of my own as well. But we did mention the practical side of dealing with a parent, and little Johnny's not getting the playing time that they expected, and he's getting things in his ear, probably as that parent continues maybe to grow frustrated over the course of the season. Those things get worse and worse, but he's still coming back into our program every day. Whether he's able to shield himself from those things or that starts to become part of his psyche, that I think depends on the individual. But from your perspective, how do we handle that type of thing, especially when that parent has stepped up or that player has stepped up and we know it's been brought to our attention somehow that that's an issue?
Keith, we ought to, you know, maybe this is a good thing for us to talk deeply about next week, because Once we start to unpack this, it frankly cannot get handled and solved quickly, even in conversation here. But I'll just go with a couple things. What is it that when a coach and a parent come together in that topic, what is it that the coach wants more than anything else for that parent to do? What's the coach want in that scenario?
We want support. We want the support of the parent.
Yes. And that support, what strategy do we use to try to get that support? What do we try to get them to do? What do you do to the parent to try to get that support?
I think you're going to explain and try to get them to see your side of things and your perspective on, you know, whatever it might be, why that certain thing is happening.
Correct. And what frustrates you more than anything when you do that as a coach? What literally drives you up the wall to the point of getting like extremely angry sometimes when you try to explain to get them to understand?
Usually it's not going to take root. They're going to continue to hold their perspective on it, and usually it could even come to a head.
So they don't, but what specifically frustrates you when you do that? It's when the parent doesn't listen, doesn't want to listen,
right,
doesn't want to understand, and stays rooted in their perspective, right?
That's right.
There you go. So what does that tell you need to do if you want to build buy-in and get that parent moving in your direction? If that frustrates you and that's the one thing you desperately want, and you know what that feels like when somebody does that to you, what is the fastest possible way for you to make that happen with a parent?
Well, Brian, the easy thing is just play little Johnny, right? But no.
No, because that wouldn't do it either, because then it's not going to be good enough.
No. I think somehow you have to find that common ground with the parent, honestly. Like,
no, it's not even that. That's too fast and too far. This is why – just flip that around. All you want is that parent to listen, understand, just get my perspective, hear it. Please just listen to me and understand what I'm trying to communicate to you. That's what you desperately want as a coach. What do you think that parent desperately wants? We make the false assumption. We assign to parents what they desperately want, and then we believe the things we create in that parent of what we say they want. And guess what the parent is doing to you as a coach? They're not listening to you. They're not understanding to you. And what are they doing? They are assigning what they think you want, and they're assigning it to you, and then they're judging you based on their own assignment. Mm-hmm. And coaches and parents do it to each other. So if you want to connect with a parent and you want that parent moved to your side, or you want to neutralize a parent who is a toxic one and they're real, the thing you have to do is listen, understand, and make that parent feel cared for, valued, and understood.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do. And if you're not willing to do that, don't complain when that parent resists you, resents you, and then talks about you in a community or on Facebook. Because that's what we do to people who don't listen to us, don't make us feel understood, don't make us feel appreciated. The second you are unwilling to listen to or connect with or understand a parent, the second you say, I will not do that with this parent, get them out of the program because you've given up.
Mm-hmm.
And own that choice. Own it. And look, if you find yourself that there's a parent who continually keeps doing this over and over and over and over again, I'll end it here because I could keep going.
Right.
if you find yourself a parent who monopolizes all of your time and monopolizes all of the stuff and goes all the way deep in, that is simply a sign that you haven't done that well enough yet. The harder the parent, the better your skill has to be. If your skill runs out, do not blame the circumstance or the other person.
Well, that's an area, Brian.
It doesn't matter. Get better mindset.
Yeah, definitely. We certainly could unpack more of that at another time, and maybe we'll get into that, because I do think that's an area coaches face constantly, especially if we're growing through the profession, younger coaches really not understanding how to handle that. And honestly, even veteran coaches, the different dynamics that we have to deal with. Yeah, when your name shows up on Facebook in some kind of group chat, right, and you're doing this or that, and it gets to you. So we'll get into all that at another time.
Hey, Keith, let me give this, since we're right in that spot, let me give this. Two things to kill off in your mindset right away. Number one, kill off this attitude. I'm the head coach, so I get to do this. Number two, I'm the head coach, you should do this for me, I'm the head coach, you shouldn't do that to me. Kill those off in your mind. Nobody cares.
Right.
Earn it.
Well, BK, a lot there. Earlier in the show, you mentioned the national conference, and we have you at two sessions there. And for our coaches out there, to register, go to usafootball.com/NC19podcast, and then enter the code podcast99 to get a discount on your registration fee. But Brian, tell us a little bit about your two topics at National Conference.
We're going to roll our sleeves up on culture, and we're going to roll our sleeves up on connection. Culture is going to be, like I said earlier, how do you build a championship culture that wins and delivers a great experience? And connection is all going to be about building relationships with people. A lot of today's conversation, in fact, how do you build relationships with people at a championship level?
And BK, we have two resources, and as you know, a lot of coaches right now are starting to wind down the season, potentially didn't make the playoffs, you may be done already, but it is time to start thinking about 2019 and the culture that you want to build and how you're going to put that together. And you've put together two great resources at a great discount for us in Lead Now and R Factor. Tell our audience a little bit about those two resources.
Yeah, you can get the systems that we teach to some of the top programs in companies in the world, actually. You can get them in the easiest possible way to get them, and that is through the virtual training, digital training package that we provide. And it's me teaching, it's video-based, and it walks through the mechanics of how do you build behavior skill, how do you build leadership skill to implement into your program. One of the most exciting resources that we provide, and it's never been easier to access. And through our relationship with you guys at USA Football, we're excited to be able to give it to high school football coaches in America at, frankly, an unprecedented rate. So I'm fired up for it.
Yeah, and you could go to usafootball.com/focus3 to be able to access those and purchase those and dig into them, and I highly recommend that. But BK, as always, thanks again. Daily discipline, I don't want to forget that one. I told you I would get that one in here too. I love daily discipline. I think you see me quite a bit tweeting those out or putting them on LinkedIn as well. Just some great daily messages to start your day. I believe I get those at about 6 o'clock in the morning every morning. It's one of the first things I look at as I get my day going. How do I sign up for the daily discipline?
For everyone, but especially maybe for those of you coaches who don't want to start with the formal virtual training approach, you want and that one's paid, the free approach that is every day. You can sign up for an email that I write every morning. It goes out at 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. You can get there just by putting literally just your name and email address into focus3.com/DD for daily discipline. Focus3.com/DD, and you'll get an email every Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. on a topic of personal discipline. Today's that went out today was, how many disciplines would it take to change your life in a significant and meaningful way? And it was all about, sometimes one discipline can change everything in your life. And I'm betting right now, everybody listening, you know what one of those disciplines that would change your life would be, and you just haven't done it yet. This email is about helping implement those things into your life personally and professionally.
BK, thanks for sharing all that information and providing football coaches the opportunity to learn some of these things, again, at a great rate. I encourage everybody to check those out and sign up for the daily discipline. Brian will be back next week, and we will continue our leadership journey.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.